Welcome to the Mindset Matters podcast, where we dive deep into the world of mindset, entrepreneurship, and real estate. Your host is RJ DeLeon. Whether you're a seasoned business owner, an aspiring entrepreneur, or looking to level up your mindset, this podcast is your go-to resource for inspiration, knowledge, and actionable strategies. Tune in.
The poor and middle class work for money. The rich have money work for them. Quote by Robert Kiyosaki, brought to us by our next guests, Andrew Jarrett and Nick Cooper. Excited to have these guys on the line. Together and combined, they have over three decades of real estate experience, hundreds and hundreds of transactions under their belt. Andrew, at his peak, had close to 2,000 units that he owned and managed, all started with a duplex. And Nick has a similar story here. Andrew has never had a corporate career, and he was financially free by the time he was 30 years old. We're going to figure out what makes these guys tick. And I'm really excited to have them on. Before we do that, you're listening to Mindset Matters with your host, RJ DeLeon. I started this podcast because we really want to know what makes successful people tick. My companies, EJC Partners and NVR Capital, sponsored the podcast because we absolutely know in life, two things are inevitable: failures and mistakes. We really want to dive into the mindsets of our guests to figure out how they've shifted their mindset to become successful. You could think of it as an audio mastermind to help you get through challenges of all kinds. Let's bring on our guests. Nick, Andrew, what's going on, guys?
Hey, RJ, thanks for having us.
Hey, RJ, thanks for having us on.
I actually heard, Nick, when you were talking to Andrew or Andy before we jumped on.
Yeah.
Should I call you Andy or Andrew? Because I was...
Andrew's fine.
We're in for a treat, guests, because this is the first time that we've interviewed two guests at the same time. And we want to understand, how did they get to the positions and how did they meet each other? If you guys want to start with, how did you get into real estate?
Nick, you want to start?
Yeah, sure. So for me, my background was a military helicopter pilot. And I think, like most military members, you kind of start buying properties where you live. And like most military members, you do a thing called move a lot. So you get orders somewhere else. And by default, you become a landlord. So I bought a few single family in the military. I moved around. I did it myself. And I kind of, you know, about 4 or 5 years, actually 5 years ago, I looked at the math on it. And I was like, oh, this is just making me $100 a month. Like, this isn't like a business. This is pretty much a hobby. So I live in San Diego. So what I did after being, you know, managing myself, my couple properties in San Diego for about 17 years is that put it on the market and I 1031 exchanged it into a 24 unit in Ohio. And I just looked at one property in San Diego got me a 24 unit, you know, out of state. Because, you know, San Diego is a very expensive market. And I was addicted. I have to do this again. It wasn't easy. And what to get that property, you know, I got on planes. I listened to podcasts, read books, everything you can think of, you know, I got coaching, I got help, and that just prepared me to do this. And that was, you know, in 2019. And since then I've acquired four other properties and close to 200 units and about $12 million under management. And Andy and I met just about a year ago. I actually wasn't on a Zoom call, Andy. We connected.
I think it was.
Power of networking.
Yeah.
Before we get too far away from that story, can you tell the audience what a 1031 exchange is?
Oh, of course. Apologize for that. So that's when you sell a property and you can, what we say, defer the taxes. So instead of paying that profit on that you have for that house that you had, that rental, you can just roll that into another property and just delay those taxes. It's not tax-free, it's tax deferred, which means that if you sell that property later, you will pay taxes on it.
We're talking about the capital gains here.
Yes.
The capital gains on the appreciation of the original asset that you purchased. Instead of paying the long-term taxes on it, you could just go out and buy another asset.
Yes.
But the asset has to be bigger. The asset has to cover the actual new valuation of the property that you sold.
Correct.
So, yeah. Sorry to go down that. What I realized a lot of times is we tend to talk like we're talking to other experts.
Yeah.
When other people are listening to the podcast and we rattle off these terms, we expect that they know what we're talking about, but we're trying to help them with financial education so that they can, like you were saying, they could get a boost up. Now, the networking piece is what brought you to Andrew. And that's what I love about it. So you guys have a similar story and similar path. Andy, can you tell the audience how you got started?
Yeah, so I learned pretty early that I did not want to have a job. I was 19 working in a grocery store and hated it. So I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad and Cashflow Quadrant and just kind of flipped the switch for me. So I started out wholesaling. I'd go to Office Max, get these big neon green signs with some black markers, and I wrote cash for houses. I'd go out at about 1 a.m, start hanging them up all over town and generate some calls. And shortly after that, I started flipping properties. So I'd put them, you know, buy them, fix them up, and then resell them. And we can get into this later, but saved up some money, and then I lost all my money. So a couple of years later, I recovered from that finally, and then got into buying single family and small multi. My first one was a duplex. I was able to go back then. You could buy and have the owner hold the second mortgage. So I got in with $1,500 as my down payment was all it took me to buy that first one. And from then started raising private money and bought stuff, refinanced, and built up to about 300 units in my hometown. That was the peak. And then after that, a couple of years ago, I just got into bigger multifamily, realized that, you know, you can buy a 100-unit complex and you don't need all the money for it. So I started doing those and been doing those ever since.
That bad experience that you just alluded to is the reason that you became a number one best-selling author, isn't it?
That's
and
correct.
That book is Don't Quit, Stories of Persistence, Courage, and Faith.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I bring this up is because there's a lot of downfalls. We talk about a lot of the ups, but you know, we're not talking about the downtimes and the periods where we make the most expensive mistakes. I want to let you guys know it wasn't always an easy journey on the way up. I was actually going to ask you about that first duplex that you bought. And it makes a lot more sense now that the homeowner was allowed to hold second. So mm-hmm. What we're talking about here is first lien, second lien position, which is basically the way that the debt sits when it gets repaid. Andy bought his first duplex with $1,500 down. The homeowner held 25% of the loan balance for you, which I was so confused. I was like, wait a minute, what about the down payment? That makes a lot more sense with second lien position. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I'm doing justice for the audience by explaining it in those terms. Do you think you could explain it better?
Yeah. So basically you go to the bank, you can't, you know, several banks don't allow this anymore, but back then you go in and say, I have a property and the owner is willing to, you know, basically hold some of it as an investment. So maybe you offer them, say it's $100,000 for easy math. You go to the bank, they'll give you a loan for 75. And then you tell the owner, you know, will you hold a second mortgage and I'll pay you 6% interest for 10 years or something. And then we'll balloon it out, you know, at the end of the 10 years. So all you have to do is go in and just pay your closing costs, whatever the bank's going to charge you. And so first position, yeah, if something happens, the bank, of course, gets paid first. So second position is a little more risky, but it helps with his payments, you know, his taxes. It's an installment sale. So that can help on his taxes. And he also keeps some of that cash flow. It's been great for longer term landlords that I've bought properties from. They, you know, they want the cash, but they also don't want to pay the tax and they hate giving up that cash flow every month.
Yep. And the reason I had you explain that a little bit is because we are a mindset podcast, but a lot of people here are aspiring entrepreneurs and a lot of aspiring real estate investors. The moral of the story there is you don't have to understand what Andy just said. You don't have to understand about the 1031 exchange now, but the education is there and the networks are there for you to learn and understand how to get into real estate. For a $1,500 investment, Andy was allowed to go into the marketplace, purchase an asset that was already cash flowing, meaning after all expenses were paid, he was making money on top. So I don't even want to know what that cash on cash return was.
Pretty yeah. high. I still own it today, actually.
Oh, you do?
Yep.
And that has likely built an amazing amount of equity, meaning equity, guys. I feel like I'm dumbing this down too much, but equity is basically the amount between what is owed on a mortgage and the valuation of the actual property. That's your equity. You can pull it out in a cash out refi, like Andy was talking about. You could sell the asset, do a 1031 exchange. The thing is that education favors the bold because you can do a lot of different things with a lot less money than you thought. And if you'd educate yourself or network with these guys, tell me about this story. How did you guys meet? We have you on the podcast together now. What's the story there?
Do you remember what Zoom it was? I don't remember.
It was on the Zoom and we reached out before I went to a networking conference that you had some family issues come up. You couldn't make it, but we're like, hey, let's just get on a Zoom anyway and then connect. So we did that. It's a little over a year ago, I think, now that we connected there. And then we've been looking at deals since then and we're under contract now for one. So it's just, I think it's all about, you never know that Zoom call you take or that phone call. That's like you're one person away from finding a partnership or a deal. You know, that's it. Like for me, finding my first deal was a phone call to someone I found in BiggerPockets. You know, it's just that you're one phone call away from finding that person that you like, hey, you connect with. Because you meet a lot of people in real estate networking groups. You're not going to mesh with a lot of them the more you kind of dig deeper in. I think it's just important for you to throw it out there and just meet as many people as you can, see who you really connect with and who do you align with as far as your goals.
Yeah. The one thing that I always say is, talk to everybody and everybody about your goals and where you want to go in the future, because you never know who's standing next to you that could change your life forever. It's the same thing. You never know who you're going to connect with, when it will pop. And it doesn't matter if you make an immediate connection. That connection could come 3 years down the line. Just nurture those relationships, especially with the people that you get along with.
Yep.
Yeah, so you got
meeting for dinner, Nick and his wife, for the first time we met down in Tampa. Or St. Pete, actually.
Oh, yeah. St. Pete, awesome.
His wife's a great investor in real estate, too.
Yep.
So. That you did mention his wife, and I was going to bring it there. In life, we always have a support system. Most of the time when you see very successful people, they're not going it alone. They have somebody that they're calling. It could even be a therapist when things go wrong. Nick, I guess your wife is an amazing investor. Can you talk about that relationship? And do you guys use each other for support? And then Andy, tell us about your support system coming through the ranks.
Oh, for me, 1,000,000%. Like my wife is my everything. She's my reason. She is my best, you know, partner as far as I bounce all my ideas off of her. So her background is sales and I'm more of an analytical numbers person, but we really complement each other's skills as far as in real estate. And I think that initially, you have that mindset, you know, when you're younger and you think like, oh man, I gotta like save this money up for one day to buy a house one day. I remember when I told her that I was going to sell my rental in San Diego and buy an apartment complex. She's like, you're out of your mind. You know, so she was the person that I had to show. And she didn't say like, tell me how to do it. She basically said, show me how to do it. And I had to go show her like, this is it. This is the way, and not, and sell her on the dream. So you have to have your partners buy in on this. They don't have to be involved like my wife is, but they have to be aligned with you. And that's very important. You're going to have a very difficult time if your key partner doesn't believe in your vision.
Right. I believe that. Andy, how about yourself?
Well, now, you know, I've got Nick and our two other partners. We lean on each other for sure. But coming up, you know, through the ranks was always, I've got other friends that are, you know, entrepreneurs, and not in real estate, but other businesses. So it's kind of nice to bounce each other's, you know, ideas off each other there. And just other investors too, you know, going to the real estate investment clubs, if, you know, problems come up and you can learn from people there, great networking, going to the national, you know, clubs and syndication events. It's been great. Just, you know, meeting people in the same field and kind of talking through things.
Yeah. So that brings me up a question. Are you still learning?
Of course, every day.
Do you still make mistakes?
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately.
Yeah, it is unfortunate, but hopefully now we know how to deal with it. The monetary value of those mistakes become less, and we know how to deal with them by reaching out to our network.
Mm-hmm. If you're not making mistakes, you're not growing, you know?
Exactly.
Now, yeah, you're going to pay for it either in hard lessons you're going to learn, or you're going to pay for an education. So you choose how you're going to do it. Either way, you're going to pay.
Yeah.
What I truly believe is even if you pay for that education, you're still going to make those mistakes.
Yes.
But that's something to be said of a mindset program, finding mentors, because they will elevate your game. They will teach you to avoid common mistakes that don't have to be made. Yep. And that's the power of that. The one thing that I do want to rewind to what you said, Nick, is your partner has to be invested in the dream. They have to see the vision.
Yes.
The one common thing that I, or question that I always receive is, how did you sell your wife on getting you to do this stuff? How do you do that? How do you convince your partner? Do either of you guys have advice?
Yes, 100%. So you have to show her how to do it, like how you're doing it. And you have to show you're committed, not like, oh, I'm looking at, you know, I'm looking at like reading books and podcasts. Like, no, action, which means, so what I did is she's like, you're serious about this. I'm like, yes. Yeah. So I flew out to markets on my own and looked at deals and was gone for weeks. I took time off of work and did these things. You know, I took time away from my family to do this. And I think that you have to show them that you're dedicated, that you're serious about it. It's not just something, a book you just read. You know, I just look at a book and I'm all motivated, but motivation isn't going to last you at all. It's the discipline. So it's like, okay, this is my goal. How do I get to that goal?
How about you, Andy? Is your wife involved in the business?
I'm single. So, you know, just kind of motivate myself.
My bad.
He's married to real estate, RJ.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, I get it now. Yeah,
my wife is apartments.
Which brings us to another thing, the motivation aspect, because motivation is only going to get you so far. It's discipline. It's doing the work when nobody else wants to do the work, when you're too tired, when you're too bored, when your body's hurting or you're too stressed. It's the discipline getting through that. How do you guys stay motivated enough, but how do you also keep that discipline to make sure you're doing the right steps and actions?
Good, Andy. I'll take the next one.
Yeah. So for me, working out has been huge, because if I can work out every day, I get up at 5:30 in the morning, go to the gym. If I can do that, it kind of makes everything else easier in the day. Some days I don't want to get up and I'm like, you come back, You know, you've got your workout in, then I read for a half an hour, some sort of book, motivational or educational, and just kind of keeps you no matter what, every day I'm doing that. So then I go through my list the night before when I leave the office, I'll write out, you know, three things that I have to do the next day. Like these are top priority. And then that's the first thing I hit. So as long as I'm doing that, even if I don't feel like it, you know, it keeps the discipline going for me.
I think you make a great point there, because a lot of people don't understand how tied, how your physical being and your physical health is so tied into your ability to perform in other areas. Yeah. And that's why we always say mind, body, spirit. Consistently educate, make sure you're healthy and always moving, and then believe in something, whether it's a higher being or God. We mind, body, spirit is always the three levels that I always think about. And typically when you're having difficulties, it's because one of those aspects of your life are off balance.
Yep. Yeah. And if you don't feel good, you're not going to, you're not going to succeed in the other
aspects. You're not going to perform.
Exactly.
Nick, do you have similar disciplines? Do you have any routines?
I think that, you know, motivation, like I said, it doesn't last, and discipline keeps you going. And it's, for me, it's the habits of, like Andy says, get up in the morning. And I have a journal, that the same red journal that I've been using for the past 3.5 years. And I was telling my wife about this, and I go in it every morning. I write my thoughts out, three things I'm doing that day, and gratitude also. And then you write your pretty much your mantra, or like your goals in there. And it's funny how all these goals that I've written down from 4 years ago, I looked back, I'm like, oh, I said, I'm going to marry my wife here when she's my girlfriend. Did that happen? I move into a house in a nice neighborhood in San Diego. It happened. And it's, I'm not getting all woo woo with the manifestation stuff here. That's my wife's, you know, Baloo. She likes to, she's into that. But it does work. Like, I think that these things that you do consistently, it becomes who you are. And then doing that along with the working out. So I think with working out, like Andy said, that sets your entire day up and your entire mind up to perform. And working out and being healthy is the one thing you can't outsource. Like, you have to show up and do that. I could pay someone for everything else, but for that, I have to show up and do the work.
That is so true.
You got it. Everything else, you can hire someone or have someone to do it for you. This thing, you have to do it. And I think with that, I time block my day also. And I just make sure that a big thing for me is Fridays are pretty much for me. So in the morning, I will work, but around 11 o'clock, I'm done. Like, I'll do something social. I will go do networking. I still do that a little bit, but no like grind time. That's why I wake up really early in the morning at 5, so I can do those things.
Yeah.
And also key for you to, at the end of the day, so I journal twice a day, is to kind of recap your day. How did you do? Did you perform? You know, I have a little note card that lists off everything I did, and I bubble it in if I completed it or not. If I didn't do it, then I have it for the next day. And if it's 2 days in a row, then that's a problem.
And that was a great point I want to say to you, like habits for me, your habits are what get you your results. And eventually that's what your life is. You know, your habits create your life and what happens.
You are what you do.
Yeah. It's huge.
Yeah.
That was a great point.
You are what you do. My initial reaction was, how do you have the same book after 3 years?
Oh, it's the same type of journal.
It's the same type of journal. I know. Yeah. I know. My mind kept going back there.
Yeah.
Like, oh, wow. The same
one? Yeah.
I didn't that's know amazing.
That. Yeah. That's funny. Yeah.
I didn't even know this, Andy.
Me either.
Man.
The thing that you'll find out is the success habits of successful entrepreneurs tend to be the same, whether it's journaling, working out, paying attention to mind, body, spirit, knowing that all these things influence their success, creating habits, time blocking. Those are all things that we always want to talk to the audience about, because I feel like we try to take the easy way out all the time. We're too lazy, or we just don't want to do it. or there's the initial excitement. And when that wears off, it's like, sorry. And the only person you're cheating is yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And like you said, RJ, success leaves those clues.
Yep. That's Mike Murawski says that, doesn't he?
Yeah. From a couple of people, actually. Success leaves clues.
Success leaves clues. And I think he got that from Napoleon Hill or Dale Carnegie or somebody. But success does leave clues, which successful people don't mind sharing those clues. If you ever want to get or achieve a level to these people that you immortalize, you can just study their habits, behaviors, the patterns of what they've done, and know that you have the strength to do the same. It's all about discipline in your actions and making sure that you're consistently moving the needle forward. How about you guys tell me about a learning lesson, a big learning lesson, and how you got through that? Who was your support? And Andy, you smiled. I think we could talk about what happened to make you write a best-selling book.
Yeah, so when I was younger, you know, I was doing those flips, saved up some money. I had my real estate license as well. And my broker at the time, we became good friends, and it was his relative, got into a scheme, you know, didn't do my background checks and ended up investing over six figures. And basically the guy just ran off, never found him again. Ended up having to get the police involved, and they tracked him down. So he'd done it in several states. I think he got 15 years he was sentenced to, actually. But yeah, so consider going, you know, I was upside down in credit cards because I took some of it on a cash advance because I'm like, man, what a great return. I want to get as much money in there as I can. So I ended up getting my second job, not career, but I got a job at a hardware store, getting up at 4:30 in the morning. I think I got out at like 11:30. Would go home, shower real quick, and then right back to real estate to try and get out of that job as fast as possible.
What were your learning lessons? What was your mindset at the time? And how were you able to get over that hurdle to achieve what you've accomplished today?
Well, I'm not going to lie to you. My mindset was not the greatest at the time. It took me a little bit to get over that, but it was a great life lesson. You know, never quit. Don't give up. So now if something happens to me, if I got through that, I can get through anything, you know, just never quit. So yeah, I got out of that, ended up, you know, selling a couple of houses, and I had a property management firm. I sold that to raise some capital and recovered. But within 6 months, I was out of that job.
Nice.
Did side jobs. I actually would broker some jobs. So I would get, you know, I put ads out for construction jobs, and I'd bring my contractor and just kind of make a split. You know, so I didn't have to actually do the work. Some of them I did, but did a split. And then that taught me negotiation too, which has helped me in the long run, negotiating contracts.
That's huge. And your background, your tenacity, your grit and perseverance is what allowed you to accomplish today. Guys, never quit. Andy is saying he invested six figures at a time where he didn't even have the money. He was taking out cash advances, but because of his awareness to the situation and his perseverance to get out of that situation, he was able to leave that second job within 6 months. Yeah, how about you, Nick? Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say the one thing I learned was always do your background checks on somebody before you invest.
Due diligence, right? Mm-hmm. So you see a lot of successful people investing in a lot of projects. And what we tell ourselves is, I don't have the capital to do what they do. Where, although that may be true, we've conditioned ourselves to be able to look at an investment opportunity and make very quick decisions. Whereas people that don't put themselves in that situation day in, day out, and they're not educating themselves, you actually talk yourselves out of these situations. You can invest with Andy. You can invest with Nick. You can invest with me. But instead of taking the time to educate, you just make the excuse that I don't have enough capital to do that right now. In the future, when this happens, I'll look at it. But in the future, if that, whatever it is that happens to make you ready, you look at it, it's already too late. Because that investment's going to pass you by and you're going to make the same excuse. It was too quick of a timeline. What I like to tell people is if you really want passive income, if you really want financial freedom, stop telling yourself these excuses. Start educating yourself today, because there are so many different ways for you to get into an investment, but you're never going to know how to make the decision, and you're never going to make the decision if you never educate yourself. Because by the time you're ready and the investment's right in front of you, say it's like 50% returns on your money, you're going to be like, oh, I don't know anything about this deal. And it's going to pass you by. You're going to kick yourself in the butt after you educate and you're like, oh, wow, yeah, that was a great deal. I should have done that way back then. I should have done this decades ago. I went down a rabbit hole there, guys, because Andy, Nick, and I, we all raise capital and we're all trying to help our investors out. We do not close on properties. We do not purchase assets without doing our own due diligence. We would never bring you a deal that we would not invest our own money in. And we're all friends too. Mm-hmm. If I'm just saying, hey, educate yourself. I know you've been talking about this for years. Just take a look at the paperwork.
Yep.
I don't know. Sorry. Do you guys want to add anything to that?
I would say it's like the quote, success is when opportunity meets preparedness, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Exactly.
Go ahead, Nick.
I think it pretty much encapsulates everything perfectly that you said. So I think for me, it was my life mistake was playing not to lose instead of playing to win. And I was playing defense most of my life, you know, at a W-2, very secure job. And I took little risks here and there. And I think it was the biggest risk was not doing anything. Like I let a lot of hot markets kind of pass you by because it wasn't the right time. I was waiting for the perfect time, you know? And I'm a big believer that you're going to make money in all markets if you know what you're doing and you get that education. And I think that when I started taking action and actually doing what I said I was going to do, I 3X my net worth. It took me 20 years to get to a certain level. And within a year and a half, I tripled that net worth by actually taking action. You know, 20 years of a slogging away at a W-2 job to get that this little bit of, you know, nest egg. And then by investing, use my education and taking action, I tripled that.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm retired now.
Yeah. Yeah. It took you 20 years to get there. And then you 3X your money in probably just a few short years. Whereas if you were taking those risks initially, not even that they would have been risks, that you were educating yourself, you would have been more comfortable with the idea earlier.
And yes.
I got to tell you.
Exactly.
I don't know if that was my problem. I think I was too busy being not focused. But yes, I understand and I see that 100% now. We're going to rehash that quote that you just said. Playing not to lose, like that's what we're all doing. We're all playing into the comfort. We want to stay in the comfort zone. We want to work traditional jobs and get stable investments, put it in 401ks. But the thing is, if you really want to accomplish this financial freedom and you really want 10X your money quickly, you got to get out of that mindset. We all know what just happened in the stock market and everybody's 401ks. So where it went from, I don't have enough money, all my money's in my 401ks, I don't want to take it out of there. Now it's, oh, my 401k is not doing very good, and now's not the right time, and I lost all my money in the markets. My point here is there's always going to be an excuse if you're looking for an excuse.
Yes.
There's exactly. always going to be an excuse.
And you have no control in the stock market.
Nope.
Yeah.
You know, at least with real estate, you can control the income side.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. Controlling the income side, having asset-backed investments. Can you tell the audience why that's a bit safer?
Yeah, I mean, look at Enron, you know, as a good example in the stock market. If something goes wrong with a rental, like I've had places catch on fire, but I have insurance for that. I don't lose my money. You know, I made whole. You can control the income and expenses. Maybe you can bump rents or, you know, build back some utilities or fight your assessment to get your taxes down. Where when you're investing in a stock, you don't know if the books are correct or not. You can't control income expenses. You're basically just giving somebody your money and hoping for the best.
Yeah. You're on for a wild ride. And that's true definition of not having control.
Yeah.
That is 100% true definition of a gamble. You don't know what's going on. Even though the company's profitable and had its most profitable year ever in existence, stock market sentiment or whatever happened with the earnings report, it kills and tanks your stock.
Yeah.
And you don't actually get a portion of that net operating income that they're making, which is different when you come over to real estate. Because what we do is we promise you, or we give you a preferred return based on the net operating incomes. So you're going to be made whole. And the second thing that I love that you said there, actually, it should be the first thing, is you have insurance.
Yep. Yeah. Insurance
you have on stock. There's no such thing as a 401k insurance plan.
Mm-hmm.
that's hilarious, isn't it?
I heard before too, like you can go to a bank and get a loan to buy a piece of real estate. No bank's going to give you a loan to go buy some stocks.
Exactly. Nobody's going to, I'm not going to give you a loan either.
Right.
Maybe I own some stock. I'm not going to own or finance that for you.
Yeah, exactly.
That's funny. Can you give the audience, I want to hear it in each of your individual tones, give the audience a piece of advice that you wish you could have heard when you were younger?
I would say start. So I think the biggest thing is, you know, the whole adage of when's the best time to build or plant a tree 20 years ago, the next best time is now. And I think that you become so paralyzed by analysis that you have to pick your lane and go with it. You're going to be successful whether you do multifamily, storage, single family. Pick your lane and become an expert and link up with experts in that space and figure out how to do it. Don't be everywhere. Find your space. Okay. Hire a coach and a mentor. Coach.
Yep.
Andy, for you?
I would say, you know, chase your dreams. When I was younger, my goal has always been to buy bigger properties, you know, 300-400 units or bigger. And I was buying, you know, small multifamily to start. I was raising other, you know, private money, OPM, but it didn't occur to me that I could raise $20 million, you know, to buy a 300 unit versus for a duplex, you know, raising 50 grand or 100 grand or something. Yeah. So I would say go bigger faster and, you know, just chase that dream. Don't give up.
Those are two of the largest components. Just start. You got to start. And start chasing your dreams. Stop sitting on the sidelines. Stop making excuses. You got to start. And you always got to follow your dreams and your passions.
Yep.
So that starts with stop making excuses as well.
Fact. Exactly. Exactly.
And we still all do it. And it just gets easier. It gets easier to recognize when you're telling yourself, an excuse. And there's differences between excuses and true obstacles. An obstacle would be a physical health issue, that you're bedridden. That's an actual obstacle. But an excuse is, I don't have time, when you're really just sitting on the couch watching TV.
Excuse, one of my favorite quotes is, you can't deposit excuses.
Nope, you can't. Absolutely not. You cannot deposit excuses, guys. So the podcast is about helping aspiring entrepreneurs chase their dreams, get out of your comfort zone, learn what these guys are doing to become successful. And I think they've said a lot of great points here. You got to start. You got to stop making excuses. You have to follow your dreams and you have to continue forward no matter what. Continuing forward is not just maintaining the motivation. It's having the discipline to carry forward the acts that you have to do to become successful when the, you know, the glamour is gone, when the excitement's worn off.
What's your cost of doing nothing?
Yeah,
that's the biggest risk, is doing nothing.
Yep. Yeah. And so when people think about that, so immediately I thought the cost of doing nothing is nothing. But You got to think about it in the fact that the cost of doing nothing is costing you your dreams.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The cost of doing nothing is your future. The cost of doing nothing is staying in the same job that you hate, doing the same motions every single day. That's the cost. That's the true cost. It's not playing it safe. It's not, you know, I don't lose my money, at least. It's never learning how to move forward, never learning how to push past those boundaries.
Yep, I agree.
It's exactly wherever. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask, do you guys have excuses that you tell yourself, and how do you snap out of it? Because that is the difference. I find myself making excuses still, but I'm like, that's an excuse. Why am I even telling myself that? And the point is that even the most successful people still have to get out of their own mindset. So
I think, RJ, especially, like, so even though you're disciplined, there's days where you are going to fall off that wagon of discipline. And the biggest thing is, you get, like, if it becomes a pattern, then you, oh, I can't do this. Well, get back on it. So if you miss a few days of working out, get back on it. Like, the worst thing you do is just keep on that pattern. Like I said before, you are what you do, and that's not you. Just get back on it.
Yeah.
Yep. I'd say your reason for success has to be bigger than your excuses.
Yeah. So perfect.
Like, I have like a vision board, and if I'm feeling down one day or something, you know, sometimes stuff just doesn't go right. Nothing you can do. You just look at the vision board and think, well, if I give up or I fall off the discipline, I'm never going to get, you know, what's on that board. So you just got to keep pushing.
There's two things that I'm pulling out of this. I'll start with Andy, because you said the pain had changed. And I believe the quote is, the pain of not changing has to be greater than the pain of change.
Yep.
And that's one of those things that is a little confusing to people, but we were alluding it to earlier. Well, what's the cost of not doing anything? It's nothing, because I'm not taking risks. Well, actually, in fact, the cost of not doing anything is your entire future, is everything that you want. That's the cost. Being a professional in the space, being an expert, being somebody who is successful, those are things that we recognize and can recognize immediately, that there is a lot more risk to not doing something than the fact that, oh, I just don't have to do those behaviors or whatever. It's easier for me. No, it's costing you a lot more. It's costing you your physical health in the future. It's costing you a few years of life because you didn't want to go work out. It's costing a lot more than you expect. You just don't see those immediately. You're stuck in the, I'm comfortable, all while still wanting those bigger things. And nobody's going to do the work for you.
Yep.
And then the second one, I actually sort of forgot what the second one is. Because that
one
was
on a roll.
That was so pertinent to me. It's like, yeah. Come on, guys. Like, we got to stop making the excuses. And we all do it. We all make those excuses. So, I mean, if you listen to that podcast episodes, we're not experts. We continue to make mistakes. Nick and Andy have said that time and time again in this podcast alone. Yep. And we're just letting you know, we're all human. Oh, I know what it is. Nick, you said if you don't want to go work out or you missed a couple days at the gym, just get back to it because that's not you. And it begins with what you tell yourself, what type of person you are. You can't tell yourself, I'm not a morning person, because that's really just a skill set. And by you telling yourself you're not a morning person, you're making those habits a little bit more difficult for yourself. And that's that. So it begins with our identity, with our character. What are we telling ourselves we are? That's why you got to get out of the negative mindsets, the limiting self-talks, the limiting beliefs. Stop telling yourself you don't deserve something, that you don't have the proper education, that you don't have the right amount of capital. Because what we were saying is, with the proper appropriate amount of education and quite a bit of networking and mentorship, you can accomplish anything, and it's a lot easier than you may expect.
Yep. It's like Nick said too, your habits, you know, or, sorry, your habits, you know, they build up. So you're not going to be motivated every day to get up and call brokers or go to that networking meeting. But if that is your habit, then you're going to do it whether you're motivated or not. And that's what's going to push you across the line.
And I think just to add a bit, if you're waiting for that perfect moment, you know, that perfect opportunity to do it, it's going to pass you by, because someone else who knows way less than you and is not as smart as you is taking action and doing it while you're sitting there waiting for the perfect moment. So you just have to do it. You have to start.
Yep.
Can't emphasize that enough. Like, start, get into your lane and start doing it.
And luck is when opportunity meets preparation, being able to take that action and trust yourself. I believe like that's a huge thing here. A lot of us don't trust ourselves, where if you're a motivated person and you have the ability to hopefully have the ability to see things through, which is also a skill set that you can learn, teach yourself, you got to trust in the process, trust yourself. Trust that you're going to be able to get out of any situation you put yourself in, hopefully, at least, by doing the right things, by having integrity, by having those core values. Which brings me to another question, guys. Do you guys have values? Like, what are the virtues that you stand by that have carried you into your careers?
I'd say for myself, being military background, I think your word means a lot. And I think it goes along with integrity. And it's even if you don't like doing, like telling people bad news, they better hear it quick. And I think that for me, it's integrity is my number one thing you have to go by. Because you can do many deals, but you have to do it with the right person, the right group. And if you don't align with that person, you may be blinded by a great deal when the partnership group isn't great. And so when the chips are down and money starts to come into play, it reveals really who you are. So that partner that you were kind of had that spotty sense saying, it's not a good partner, he's going to show you who he really is. So I think you need to make sure that you definitely are aligned morally with your partner. That's the most important thing you do, is pick the right partner. After picking the right spouse, wife, husband, whatever, that's the most important thing, is picking the right business partner.
Right.
Because you'll make the deal happen with the right people. Even a bad deal, you'll make it work.
Yep. Management is what gets the deals done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I would say mine was going to be similar, actually. Basically, keep your word. Your word, your bond. You know, keep your word to yourself. If you say you're going to get up and go do something in the morning, you do it. If you tell somebody, you know, tell your partner or your friend or investor, this is what I'm going to do, then you better do it, because it's a small community, the multifamily community. If you tell someone you're going to do something and you don't do it, that's going to get around fast.
Yeah. Being reliable, Andy, you're right. Yeah. Being reliable is the biggest trait. Why you connect with someone? Is that person reliable? Right. You want your friends to be reliable. We all have that friend who doesn't show up to things or shows up late. Would you want to partner with that person? Probably not.
Right.
Well, I have to admit, I'm sort of that friend now, just because it's, you know, we've come so far apart. I love those friends, but we no longer talk about the same things. They're, you know, we're no longer interested in the same things, which goes with your sphere of influence versus your social circle, and how once your sphere of influence becomes your friends, you start to realize that you've made a switch in transition. It's not saying that we don't love those old friends. It's just that you're growing in a way that only your sphere of influence can help you level up. Sometimes you gotta shed. I heard this the other day. Sometimes you have to shed the rocket boosters, because if you watch a space shuttle go to space, it gets to a certain point and it sheds its boosters to be able to go, you know, further.
Yes.
And we're not saying that it's good or bad that you have to shed friends. You know, we all love them. It's just sometimes you have to leave people behind so that you can continue to grow.
RJ, so that perfectly, my friend. It's your friends then are great people, but it's we hang out with them. It's like, you talk about, hey, remember when.
Yes.
You know, your friends you make now in real estate, I heard someone tell me this, is imagine when. So it's like, that's like your future. And it doesn't mean your friends before are bad. You're just in a different place now. You're in a different stadium, a different playing field, a different level.
Yep. Which brings us to the networking, the support system. It seems like you two are good friends. And you guys met about a year ago, which tells me, like, you don't have to worry about who you're going to be friends with. And, you know, your old friends that are still going to the bars every single week, because now we have a different intrinsic motivation. We have different things that give us the adrenaline, the cortisol to make us happy. And it's planning for the future and growing. And
yeah, exactly.
Two different stages of your life. So,
yep.
All right, guys, I don't know if you've listened to the previous podcast, but I always have a fun round at the end. This is going to be interesting because I want to play your answers against each other. We always ask a bunch of silly questions and fun questions at the end to get to know you guys a little bit better as guests. Are you guys ready?
It's like a battle of wits, huh?
Yeah. Are you guys ready for this?
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Okay. The question that I always ask first is, what is the weirdest food that you loved as a child? Like weirdest food. And would you still eat it today, or do you still eat it today?
I think for me, I liked really soggy cereal, like Raisin Bran. That was just all like into mush. Yeah, I probably would eat it now. I mean, the consistency is a hard no for me. So no.
My parents tell me when I was younger, I'd only eat squash. I don't know why. I hate it now. I won't touch it. But that's all I used to eat.
All right.
Okay.
Squash as a child is pretty weird to me.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. But you should eat your vegetables. True. And Nick, what I was, when you were saying soggy cereal, I remember a time where I would let my cereal sit for 5 minutes before I would eat it.
Oh yeah, that's exactly it. But like to another extreme, you know, like come back.
Frosted Flakes was my thing, which if you think about it now, just sugar, it's sugar in a bowl.
Yeah.
And that was marketed to us as a great breakfast.
Hey, way to start the day, you know, a bunch of sugar and
exactly.
Corn.
Yeah, that's a little crazy. So, all right. So we're not eating soggy cereal and Andy should eat his vegetables.
As long as it's not squash.
Yeah.
As long as it's not squash. How would your best friends describe you in high school as a teenager? Nobody's looking. You can't hear the answers. How would they describe you?
My wife's going to agree with this. Nerd. Probably a nerd, like cross country runner, that type of thing. So yeah, got thrown in the showers, you know, as a freshman. So yeah, a little nerdy.
I would say probably, you know, fun and motivated. Always knew I wanted to own my own business of some sort. So,
you know, unmotivated. Would they say that you're a little off your rocker then?
Probably.
I got that a lot because I always want to own my own business, but everybody's like, dude, you're on to a new thing every other week.
Yep.
Like you can't keep focus.
Yeah.
You're just out there having fun. And I'm sorry, Nick, that you got thrown into the showers. Was it the wrestlers or the football players?
Football players. They got me. God. They got me. That was easy pickings.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
All right. So, all right. We'll do this one together as fun. If you guys were stuck together on a deserted island, you had no contact with the outside world, and you could not watch TV or anything. No interaction with human beings other than yourselves. What do you think you guys would do if you had unlimited resources at your fingertips?
Are we together?
Yeah, I guess we're together now.
All three of us? I'd say build a raft.
Unlimited resources?
Unlimited resources. We could have a nuclear reactor if we wanted.
I'd say we'd probably let Nick fly us around in a helicopter and talk about real estate.
Yes. Oh my God. That's really good.
That's good. Or a plane. I got that covered too.
Or a plane.
Yeah. Wow. That actually would be really fun. For a while, I think I'd want to try to tinker around with making our own, but thinking of it, we'd probably crash.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So Nick, guys, is a licensed pilot. He used to fly helicopters, and that's amazing stuff. I was telling him that I wish to fly helicopters one day, and the first thing that he said is, you absolutely can.
Yeah.
you absolutely can. You could do whatever, well, most things of what you'd like. You just got to pursue and start. So what is your favorite thing to do in your off time?
I'd say spend time with my wife. So I think for me, family is number one. And my wife and I almost always have a day on the weekend where we kind of do, you know, it's family day. So it's like where we do, you know, we work out in the morning, we cook breakfast together, and then we take the dog out for a walk or do an activity. Maybe go see like, you know, something in the park or a play or something like that. So I think it's definitely spending time with my family. Be number one by far.
Nice.
For me, I like to work out and hang out with my friends.
He's living the bachelor life. Yeah. Nick, you just scored brownie points here. Of course, I'd hang out with my wife.
Yeah, no, I think find a partner that wants to do things with you. You know, my wife and I do work out together, and we're able to kind of coordinate our life in a way that we can do that now. When I was a pilot, I was gone all the time. I couldn't do these things. So now I really cherish the time. I mean, it's 1:30 on a Tuesday and I'm here at home sitting in my front room.
Yeah.
You know, my wife is and I had, you know, a meal today. We're going to eat dinner together tonight. And that's something that what we do now, this real estate and being an entrepreneur has allowed me to do is spend time with the people that you care about the most.
Exactly. Yep. Like we all work for something.
Yes.
There's always a why. And typically that comes with family, spending time, more time with family. So I think it goes a long way to find somebody that you love to be with, that you could do things together.
Yes.
It's the same thing with my wife and I. I'd want to do the same thing because she'd want to do the things I want to do and go for a hike, whatever. But
all
the one thing I do want to say is that's not a green screen.
No, it's not.
It looks amazing.
It's real.
You should take a picture of it and other people could use it as their green screen.
They could use it as a green screen. You're right.
Exactly.
This is my background. This is real.
Andy, is yours a green screen?
Mine is a green screen.
Okay. I'm like starting to question everything now. I'm like, wait a minute.
It's the Matrix, man. It's the Matrix.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's a beautiful house. So
thank you.
Awesome. Andy, you didn't answer. Oh, working out, right?
Yeah.
Yep. In your spare time, you would work out. Awesome. Mm-hmm. So give us the most beautiful place you've ever visited.
Oh, there's so many. I would say what kind of tops my mind is Lanikai Beach in Hawaii, that I used to think of like when I was in a dark place in my life. That's where I think my happy place was. So I was in the Navy and I was like, oh man, this really sucks here. I'm in Iraq. This is not very fun. I would think of this place, this perfect beach, you know, on the east side of Hawaii and Oahu. And I'd be like, this is like where I want to be right now. It's like so calming and so peaceful. And it's great because my family's from there and I've been there every year with my wife, and going there with her is definitely really special. It's like, oh, this is like my place. I mean, I think are there more beautiful places in the world? I mean, maybe, but the feeling you have being there is kind of, it's the whole thing, not just the beauty.
Yeah. Yep. Great. I would say mine's probably a tie between Turks and Caicos because the water is amazing there, or the Christ the Redeemer statue in Rio, Brazil, was amazing to be up top and just see the view from up there. So probably a tie between those two.
Nice.
I'm going to go with one other place, if I can add. I think there's a place called Big Pine Lake that my wife and I proposed to her on. So it's like this beautiful alpine lake in the Sierra Nevada as we hiked up 6 miles and got down on one knee and proposed to her there. And that's definitely the most beautiful place I've ever been to, you know, besides Lanikai.
Right. I love when we insert United States areas. It's so easy. It's all at our fingertips. It's a quick trip. But Turks and Caicos, Lanikai, Hawaii, I haven't been to those areas. I'm super interested to check that out. And
yes,
it's always nice to give the audience something to aspire to, places to go. I'm a big traveler. That's why I like asking that question.
I'll send you a picture, RJ. You'll propose your wife again.
Like, yeah. Come on, we just have to go. I got something. Yeah.
Exactly.
What is the most impactful book for you guys that's top of mind now?
I'm going to say for myself, I'll say that in the last year, I've read The Who, Not How. And that's been a great book as far as replacing yourself and finding that person to do those things that you can not outsource, but you can't do it all. It's almost like you got to find the right team to get you to your goals. And that book really and pretty much sums up how to do that. It's a great book. It's not very long either.
That is a great book. Mine would be Think and Grow Rich. Anytime I'm feeling off, I always go, I've every time I go through, I highlight stuff. I just kind of skim through there, you know, see what I highlighted, and that puts me right back in the right mindset.
That's a good one. It's tried and true. For some reason, thought you were going to go with overcome the pitfalls and hurdles of real estate investing.
That's a good one too. Still have it over there.
For everybody, that's just the book that your father gave you, right?
Yep. And Russ Whitney.
That was a little jumpstart into getting real estate going.
Mm-hmm.
Educated him, motivated him, for him to create the disciplines to then be here.
Yeah. Right.
Thanks, guys. Last question.
All right.
What does the future look like for you?
More deals, more offers, and getting larger. And I think for Annie and I, both helping people get to where we are, be your W-2 and take control of your life, your retirement. And you don't have to rely on someone else. The best person to rely on is yourself to get there, and people doing what you're doing. So I'd say, yeah, start.
Start. Yep.
Start.
Trust yourself.
Yes.
Get started. Mm-hmm. More deals, more real estate.
Yes.
Because it's what has allowed Nick to live the lifestyle that he has now and have that beautiful historic living.
True.
Andy, exactly. For you, what does the future look like?
I would agree with Nick. You know, the future is Nick and I and our team having several billion dollars in assets under management down the road, and bringing investors with us and getting them some passive income and teaching people how to do this as well.
Yes, I like that. Before we get out of here, do you guys want to let the audience know how to get a hold of you, how to educate themselves?
Sure. I think for me, email is good. It's just NIC@HudsonBlueMF, that's multifamily.com. And I give my number out too. It's 619-990-8848. And that's my home. That's my cell phone. So text, call, all the above. And let's talk. See how I can help you out.
Mine, you can go to www.jarrett.com. You can book a call with me there. See my podcast as well. All the episodes that RJ, he's been on one as well. And see our deals. A lot of resources there. Some blogs. So that's the best way.
Perfect. Well, I appreciate that, guys. For our audience members, that just lets you know that we are regular people. We want to hear from you. Reach out. Nick and Andy are both available and would like to network with you to either help educate you with the structure of passive deals, get you some passive income, and educate.
Exactly.
A rising tide lifts all boats. Mm-hmm. That's why we are always open books. If you like the episode, please follow, leave 5-star review, send us an email, give us criticisms, critiques, whatever it is that you guys want to do. Let us know if we're doing a good job and if you want to hear something different. As I was saying earlier, this show's not monetized. My companies pay for this podcast to go on. I want everybody to educate themselves and get past those mental barriers. Let me know that you're out there listening. We'll see you guys next week.
Thanks, RJ.
Thanks, RJ. Appreciate it. This was so fun, my friend. Thank you.
And that's a wrap. Thanks for joining us on another episode of Mindset Matters. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to hit that subscribe button to stay updated. We'd also appreciate it if you'd leave us a review. Your feedback helps us improve the show. Thank you for being a part of the community, and remember to keep that positive mindset. Until next time.